So I will do my best to cover these. All the verses are here. I don't know. We'll see how it goes here. I might just do half and do the next half next week or something. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, what I call, at first I called this false faith, end time religious dangers. And then I started expanding it some because it isn't just false, but some of it is faulty. So it's broken, not necessarily deceptive, okay? So there's two parts to that. So I just want to say that. I added to that the title a little bit, and you'll see that. By the way, you can see I started in 1 Timothy. We've been in 2 Timothy. I started in 1 Timothy and worked my way to Titus. Most of the passages here are in 1 Timothy, but there's parallel ideas in both 2 Timothy and Titus for many of these. What I want to do is just highlight once again the dangers that are ever present, but some of these, as you'll see, are more and more possible and more present as we go on. It isn't that there weren't false teachers ever since the beginning of time. The serpent in the garden was a false teacher, right? So it isn't that they weren't there, but the Bible says that the world will kind of be drawn to them, including believers. So these are dangers. It's things to be aware of, and if you're not aware of them, then it's a lot easier to succumb to those dangers or be caught off guard by those dangers. Okay? Look at number one here, and again, just going down the list, so to speak, in a scriptural order. The danger of ignorant teachers. Let me read the passage. It's 1 Timothy 1, 3 through 7. Paul says this to Timothy, "As I urged you when I went into Macedonia, remain in Ephesus, that you may charge some that they teach no other doctrine, nor give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which cause disputes rather than godly edification, which is in faith." It causes fights rather than building people up. "Now the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from sincere faith, from which some, having strayed." And what did we say about strayed? I think last Wednesday, but probably also on Sunday. You cannot stray from some place you weren't there in the first place, right? So I believe these are believers. "They've strayed, having turned aside to idle talk." It's really things that do not matter, or worse, they misinform and they mislead and lead people astray. "But they've turned aside to idle talk, desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say nor the things which they affirm. But we know that the law is good if one uses it lawfully." I preach this. I've only taught at camp once, apart from retreats, and it was like a morning session. I did like four sessions out of the pastoral epistles. Maybe it was just 1 Timothy. But one of the things that I had been pricked in my heart about this already, way back then, and it's been a long time ago now. Who was a baby then? But it was quite a while ago. I was in Washington, or right after Washington, 1994-ish maybe. But I brought it up and I said, we need to be careful about teachers. We need to limit the teachers. And I brought up the idea of James 3:1. This was way back then when I was still just kind of wrestling with the idea. And I said, I don't know what the ultimate answer is. I didn't really have it formulated much. But Paul told Timothy exactly that. I said, normally in churches you hear, we need volunteers for this, volunteers for that. And I'm saying, number one, you need to be selective in who you have teach. And number two, there shouldn't be that many teachers because it's difficult to really know what you're doing and what you're saying. And notice here, these people in 1 Timothy 1, what did they desire to be? Yeah, do you see that?
Is that wrong? They desire to be teachers of the law. Any problem with that? No. Ethan's shaking his head no, and I will agree with Ethan. Alright? There's absolutely nothing wrong with the desire to do that. That's noble, that's good. And we're talking about formal teaching here because we're all required to be teaching and admonishing one another, right? This is kind of a formal, I'm an expert type of position. I don't know if expert's the right word. I'm not trying to be facetious there, but someone that knows what they're talking about. What is the problem then? What does it say there? They turned aside to idle talk, and it says desiring to be teachers of the law. But there's two problems here. They do not understand. They understand neither what they say nor what. Any problem there? Anyone want to have a class of any kind by a teacher that does not know what they're talking about? And I'm guessing all of us have experienced that at one time or another. Okay? Just you know, whatever, if it was in school or I've been in the military and different people in your life. You know, do they really know what they're talking about? Or even a sermon. Chapel, that's what I mean. You know, you get people that just wow you, and other people, it's like, how did they get up there anyway? You know? You know, I'm just saying. I don't know any necessarily particular people, but it's like, really, okay? But they don't know, understand what they say, okay? The issue is not the desire. The issue is not the desire to teach, okay? The problem is they're teaching before what? They're ready. They're not ready to teach. They don't know what they're talking about. So they do not understand what they say, nor what they affirm. What is affirm? What does it mean to affirm something?
They're not convinced of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not convinced of it.
Well, they say they don't know what they affirm. They are affirming things. You catch that?
They're condoning or approving it or...
Yeah. When you're a teacher, people ask you questions. So not only are you giving information, you're giving affirmation or the affirming, or if you will, you're confirming to them that this is true or not true. So you're giving information, but you're also giving confirmation of accuracy or not. Well, you can't have B, what they affirm, if you don't have A, what you know. Okay, so both are essential. And Paul tells Timothy to charge them not to. Okay, and you heard me say it. I don't think it's right to just stand up and start your own Bible study. And I'm not against Bible studies per se, as much as you might think I am. Okay, but I'm against this because the Bible teaches that we are not to have many teachers, James 3:1, and the teachers that we do have must know what they're talking about. If they're telling you the wrong things, are they teaching you the truth? Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And the life. All right? But no man comes to Father but by me. All this, but if we're even if we mean well, if we're not teaching the truth, it's not true, and therefore it's error. And even if it's well intended, we're sending people in the wrong direction, and we're affirming things. I've heard, I don't even know what example I could give right now, but yeah, you know, just people telling. Well, if someone told me this, it's like, well, did the Bible say that? That's the key, right? And there's people teaching, and I honestly believe it's our system, and I don't know that we can fix it necessarily. It's kind of like food stamps we were talking about. you know, the farm bill and all that, all the leveraging. The process of training leaders is kind of that way, too, because it's a whole system. I'm not saying it's all bad, it's all whatever, but I'm saying it's hard to get outside of that because it used to be that you would train with people for years. In fact, the Bible indicates that you probably, when you become a pastor, you probably have children already. You're already married and established. In fact, they call you, one word for pastor is an elder, which implies what? That you're Mormon.
You've seen the Mormon elders that are 18, and you're just like shaking your head. But the idea is elder is the word for older person. Because we've used the idea of seasoning, it takes time to learn things. And it's not that you can't learn in a small amount of time, but you can't learn everything in a small amount of time, right? I considered my education a pretty good education at FBC, I'd say. But I felt like it was just an introduction. Man, when I started preaching, I was like overwhelmed because I've never touched this verse before or the one after it or the rest of the book, you know. And so, you know, I have never looked at the word grace. And so I got to really study it out. Even though I've been taught, what does it really mean, you know, and all this. And so it takes a lot of time. But that is what we have to be careful about, and I think we've seen it in our day, and it's been a slide, it's been a progression. It used to be that training for ministry was the final step in training. You'd go to college or whatever, and then or university, and the final top-level training was what? Theology. It was called the Queen of the Sciences. And most of the schools that you could name that are older, Yale, Harvard, Princeton, were all schools started to train pastors. And in order to get into the schools, you had to know, like, Latin fluently. In order to get out of the school, you had to be able, they would hand you a Hebrew Bible, and you would have to, they would tell you to read a passage and then explain it. Of course, you're reading the Hebrew, and you're translating into Latin and explaining into Latin. I'm telling you, I don't even know Latin. I don't even know anyone who is, you know. And they would have to do the same thing with Greek. That's the level of expertise and responsibility they considered it took to rightly handle the Word of God. And that isn't the case anymore. Okay? We've come a long way, and now it's anyone who can pick up a book. Right? And it's totally different. And that's happened over hundreds of years. Okay? There's also lots of benefits. You know, you can take training on about anything over the internet for free. Okay? So there's benefits to technology and stuff, but there's also problems that come with that. So the danger of ignorant teachers, and a lot of people think, well, I've read the book, I'm good. You know, I'm an expert, and I work in the area of IT. Right now, I'm more focused on the security side, and I feel like an infant because there's so much to know. And I've even got a couple certifications that are I'm looking into possibly a master's degree. And one of my certifications is worth 5 of the 12 classes. So, I mean, I feel stupid around people that do this more, you know, way more than I do. So there's just lots to know in every field of life, and certainly the most important field of life is the Word of God and how to handle it, right? So what did Paul say? He wasn't against developing teachers, was he? The next book, he says, the things that I taught you, the same commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. He was very much for people learning how to teach and furthering that generational thing and expanding teachers both presently and in the future, right? So it wasn't an issue. It just has to be done. It has to be done well. So it isn't because someone wants to that gets you there. Just like In another point that we may or may not hit on today, because of time, but it's just like, just because you desire to be a pastor doesn't mean you are qualified yet, right? It's like, here, no, this is what you need to for, and that's what you become. You can be that when you're there, right? So it isn't negative. It's just realistic. You don't want anyone teaching you how to cook who doesn't know how to cook. Raising my hand. It's funny because I can cook a few things, but you don't want me to teach you how to cook. I will help you eat. Right, that's my expertise.
But whatever, you know, changing a tire or whatever, you want somebody that knows what they're doing. And even back in the day here, a teacher was not someone who taught a lesson. Help me out here. What was a teacher? First and foremost, a teacher is someone who had mastered that information. First, right? They were expected to know it. It wasn't that they picked up something and then regurgitated it to somebody else. It was someone that a disciple will be like his teacher. The teacher is someone who is this and knows this, right? So that's a big part of it. So the danger of ignorant teachers, and it's really profuse in our day, I really believe. And it's not the idea of people shouldn't teach nearly as much as people shouldn't teach until they're ready, right? Number two, the danger of role reversal, and I put wrong teachers and then I switched them around or whatever, but you find this in 1 Timothy 2. I desire, therefore, that men pray everywhere. By the way, the word men, you can circle that, square, or whatever, but it's for adult men. It's not generic mankind. It's adult men. So it's bringing up a gender thing, okay? That men pray everywhere. It's not even used as boys. It's only used as adult men. Men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. In like manner also that the women, now it's contrasting the two genders, right? The women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. So there's right ways to dress and there's right ways to act that are kind of gender associated. Let a woman learn, and this is kind of, I wanted to get the whole context, but here's the focus. Let a woman learn in silence, so it's all submission. And verse 12 is my key verse. And I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. Now, we just shudder at that in our day. And in times past, people have kind of thought me a little narrow-minded, and probably even more so now in our culture. But who would have thought in the short time that when did the Supreme Court of Iowa overturn the same-sex marriage thing? It hasn't been like 4 or 5 years. I mean, it's literally taken the nation by storm because now it's all over. Okay, that it wasn't just a serendipitous happening. It was planned here. And all that. There's a lot going on there. But the whole gender thing, where did gender begin? Where did it start? What chapter of the Bible? He made them male and female, right? The whole idea, that seems to make an emphasis there, right? And in our day, even in the last month, has it been a whole month? I don't even think it's been a whole month yet. Where now they've listed the gender differences for the military. Why did people ever consider that be wrong any other time? Because they saw a difference in roles and responsibilities of men and women. Okay? Not intelligence. We already know that ladies are smarter than men. That's not an argument. Okay? But in responsibility and purpose, in the way they're equipped, in the way they are to function and all of that are all geared and designed by God before the fall even.
For Adam, and notice he refers to the Garden of Eden. Adam was first formed, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but a woman being deceived fell into transgression. Okay, he gives arguments that have nothing to do with culture, nothing to do with time, because they were really pre-time. So they're overriding principles, and the church has all but abandoned that. Okay? And it flips it upside down. And I've had even conversations in my home recently, and I wasn't even part of them. But like churches that they start confusing, well, they have a woman who's, it would be a children's pastor, but we don't call it children's pastor because then you can't have, you do everything but the title, right? And it flips things upside down, okay? And what does it say, too? Because I started with the men as well. The men are to take the spiritual leadership, okay? So the danger of role reversal, wrong teachers, and it isn't because of a lack of intelligence. It isn't a lack of value. I am probably one that's persuaded that the woman with the crown creation of all that God created you, and I don't say that lightly. You know, it's the only thing that God ever created that wasn't good was a man. Right? He wasn't good alone. And so it was part of God's plan and everything, but they're meant to be together, and they're meant to do different things together. And that's true in the church. I believe that's true in the government. I believe it's true all the way, and I've shared this before. A lot of people, in most commentaries, will say this passage here only deals with the church. And I said, well, is the church a location? Is it in the church? Because they usually talk about in the, well, is it a location then? And it's not, right? The church can meet, but the church is not a place. But I also asked, well, does the idea that Adam was formed first, then Eve, is that not true outside of the church building? Is that not true in your family? Is that not true in the workplace, in the government, and all of that? Now, I'm not saying it'll change. I'm just saying that I think people have gotten it wrong. And I'm not saying that there haven't been bad men leaders or good woman leaders. The one that I think of off the top of my head is, no, not Sarah Palin, I'm sorry. Margaret Thatcher. Okay, and again, she would have to be somewhat of a feminist to get to where she is. Okay, even with that idea, but she has some good conservative principles. She made Ronald Reagan look a little to the left, you know. But the whole role reversal thing, okay? God has his way, and he starts it from the very Garden of Eden before the fall. And that just lends to chaos. And you see it. You see chaos in the home because no one's for sure who's staying home with the kids, so neither do. You see chaos in the workplace, extended things, marital breakups even and all that, but lots of things. But even the whole idea of what do I do at home or what do I do at work and which is more important and blah, blah, blah. But also in the church. And I believe men are clearly stated to need to be leaders. And it's not easy to lead. It's a lot easier not to lead. It is. It's easy to just stand out of the way and let people do it. And what's amazing is, and I think I shared this maybe Sunday. It was last Sunday. But it talked about they sneak into women's houses and living in Australia. It's like, where are the men? Right? It makes you ask, where are the men? Number three. This one is, I tie it in with a passage in chapter 5. But the danger of unqualified leaders. Who was I talking to? This was Jim and Dory yesterday, I think. We ate lunch together yesterday. But in this passage, it's 1 Timothy 3, it says, if a man desires the office of a bishop. Now, what do we say about desire? Is that bad? No. It's not wrong.
Does that qualify you to teach or to be a leader? So man desires the office of a bishop.
He desires a good work. That's good. That's good, all right? But then it goes on to say this. A bishop, by the way, I don't like the word bishop because I think chess or Catholics, one or the other. Okay? But if a man desires the position of a bishop,
by the way, it's the same word for overseer, okay?
So I like the word overseer. It actually comes from that word. It's kind of a episkopos. Bishop is kind of an alteration of that. A bishop then
must be, by the way, this is the same word. If I wrote it in English, it would be DEI. It equals necessary, okay? It's necessary.
And it's the same word that Jesus told Nicodemus. It said, you
must
be born again. Okay? We're not talking suggestion. We're talking requirement.
I had to do a seminary paper. I did it on whether the qualifications are required or suggested in a seminary class for the pastoral epistles. But that's what, and there's no argument at all. I mean, if people take it as suggested, they're just ignoring what it says. That's all there is. But an overseer must be these things before he becomes an overseer. And then it lists the qualifications there. And I'll share this. And again, I can only share my experience, not what it is today. But I remember I went to one semester in Indiana at a college, and then I came here and went to the rest of faith, right? I took senior seminar. Is that what you had? Or did you have Hispanic Calvin? Okay, that's for smart people. So you have doctor, and then your last year is either 6 hours of systematic theology or 2 hours if you're stupid. Okay? 2-hour class. But it's like a review of your theology, or more extensive if you're in systematic theology. And we got to the part where it was just like a rapid run through the doctrines, the 10 major doctrines of the Bible. And we got, my professor, we got to the qualifications of a pastor, and he said, I'm sure you've gotten this. There's a lot of different courses that touch on this. I'm sure you've got this somewhere else, so we'll move on. And I had written down, I started wrote down here, and I came up with 10 potential classes that you would have touched on, including my seminary class. And I raised my hand with Dr. Gray. Gray, I teach her all, but I said, Dr. Gray, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but this is my last semester of my last year, and I've had 10 opportunities to hear this, and no one has ever covered the qualifications of a pastor in any of the classes, including pastoral theology, the doctrine of the church, because each one says, you know, professors are pushed for time, and it's like, well, you'll cover this stuff like that. So we hurriedly covered it. Yeah, many classes too. So, and I understand that to me that would be something that the college students that are going, especially going to the pastorate, would know forward and backwards in Greek, right? To be able to explain what they mean anyway, you know, what are they? Okay. Now I know that Dr. John II wrote a little book, and he, at least for a while, was teaching, I don't know if he still teaches the New Testament survey, but one of the required books covered the qualifications of the past during that class. You had to read that book. So that was after my time. So it really depends on what's happening today. So, but anyway, the qualifications of a pastor, well, no matter how we train our leaders, we have to hit on the qualifications. And by the way, the qualifications, let me read just the pastoral ones. I have the deacon ones also, but it says here, a bishop then must be blameless. And literally, it's blameless must be. So blameless is a general term, and then it lists he has to be blameless in these specific areas. Okay, so blameless is not a specific qualification. It's the general qualification. The rest are lists
of what you have to be. Okay? But it goes like this. It says he has to be the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. One who rules his own house well, having his... By the way, you cannot take a class on that. To be qualified, you have to be that. Does that make sense? You can learn how to do it, but you still have to be that before you can be a pastor, okay? How will he... One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence, that's where it seems to anticipate that you're older, right? At least old enough to have kids. Lost my place here. Or if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, not newly saved is probably the idea. Lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Novice could even mean the idea of young, okay? Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into the reproach and snare of the devil. Okay? I'm just going to ask, I'm going to pick on Ethan. What does good behavior mean?
Just kidding.
Good behavior.
That could cover like so many things.
But it doesn't. I'm doing this on purpose. Because there's no way to know if they look it up. And the right answer is I have no idea. I'm only doing this as an example because you cannot know until you look it up. A good behavior translates one word. What do we get out of here?
Cosmos.
Yeah, it's a form of cosmos, which is structure or design.
Order.
Orderly. Organized. You don't get that out of good behavior, do you? In fact, we get cosmetics out of it, too. I think the idea is to organize your face. I've never worn cosmetics on it, no. Okay? But I'm saying, how do you measure up to the qualifications, and how do you encourage people to do so if they don't even know what it means? Okay? By the way, when I do my... apprenticeships over the years, I've done that. One of the things I require them to do is study and then preach on these. Okay? For more than one reason, but one is they probably didn't get it well. Just because there's so much to cover in a short amount of time, I get that. I don't think I would start there, not in there, okay? But also then, it makes them learn it more. But
this word is used twice in the New Testament. And one time it's used the idea of modest.
Yeah. In chapter 2, I was going to say it's in 1 Timothy again.
So what does it mean?
It means orderly or orderly.
Well arranged.
Or this, because in accordance with order. In other words, how I understand the modesty thing is it's understanding the order that God has designed and you comply with that order. Okay, modesty is the idea, you know what? Guys look at you and guys see things differently than you do as a woman. That's God's design, that's God's order, and so you respond in that way, okay? But it's the idea of order or organized in accordance with order. There's a structure about you rather than a randomness about you. Okay, so that doesn't mean everybody's order looks the same. I remember going into my my counselor. Is that the counselor advisor they call
him?
Dr. Tober was my advisor, and I would go in. First time I did, I was scared to death because I heard he ate people alive and stuff.
Yeah.
And, it was all fake. It wasn't real. It was his persona, I think. But I go in there and I'm just kind of looking around. Books everywhere, stacks everywhere. But I think he knew where everything was at. I mean, he's the guy that got more done in the least amount of time anyone I know. In fact, when I worked at the bookstore, it was hard to catch him because he was using DD for Europe the afternoon of graduation. The
go do his reformation tour. Stuff like that. But orderly doesn't necessarily mean my, you know, my method or your method, but the idea is you have a means of structure to get things done. Okay, chaos does not accomplish much. We know that in our playroom at home. It's not, you know, it's not really any fun after a while because it's all messed up and then kids go someplace else and the toy's there, right? So the idea of orderly, good behavior is kind of, there's the word good is not there, the word behavior is not there. Okay, so anyway. But the idea is we have to understand what the qualifications are. That's my point. And further, and I might just stop with this because this is good discussion. We're not really in a hurry to get through these. So maybe we'll do it next week. So maybe I'll just park on here a little more. The other thing is when you read all of these, Sean Kelly wrote me a couple months ago. I think that long ago. I don't know. And he asked, you know, what was it he was asking? Are these required or are they not? You know, that was one of the questions. And because I think they were having a discussion at the church. And so I answered some of the things that I said, honestly, Sean, look at it. Read down here and let's look at which ones of these should not be true of every person. And we'll generalize where there's a gender thing. Okay? It says here, the husband of one wife. By the way, that same qualification is listed for women in chapter 5. It's a one-woman man and a one-man woman. How many here think that being morally faithful before and during marriage is a good thing for everyone, not just pastors? Yeah. Okay? The next one, temperate, which is self-controlled. The idea is one, we actually used it Sunday. Be watchful. Be alert. Okay? That was one of the first 9 commands in the verses 1-6. So, but it's the idea of being clear-headed. Be alert. Okay? Is that good just for pastors or should everybody be that way? Yeah. And you go down the list and each one of these is what's wrong. Even teaching, even though I don't believe everyone is supposed to be a formal teacher, everyone should know the truth well enough to be able to pass it on. The Bible tells us that in Hebrews 5 and 6. The Bible tells that in Colossians 3, where it's teaching and admonishing one another. Okay? And if you become parents, you're teaching your own kids. Right? All of that comes involved. The older women are teaching the younger women. Hello? Right? There's that ongoing generalized teaching that everyone fits in, so in every way. And then how many here wouldn't want for a husband to be a good manager of his house? Caring for his children. So I tell people this. I used to wrestle with just a couple of teaching, and one the other with leading. I thought maybe these were spiritual gifts, teaching and then managing your home. It's like, really, they're not. All these are is levels of maturity and spiritual growth that every man, if you want to connect him to gender, a husband and one wife, should be as they mature in the Lord, right? A pastor has to be there before a man has to be there before he can become a pastor. I have a book in my library. It's called The Measure of a Man, and the idea is it's a Bible study for men, and it covers these qualifications because they're not pastoral qualifications in the sense that only pastors should be this way. They're maturity qualifications that pastors have to be to that point before they can become a pastor. Okay? And by the way, that also argues somewhat against the youngness of it because there's some things you just have to figure out, you know, as you get older. But that's the idea, okay? It's more of a spiritual maturity thing because they're all things. If you can flip it to the women's side, and there's nothing there really that you can argue any differently, except maybe instead of leading the home, she actually manages the home, which it says in chapter 5, okay, which is a little different word. It's actually the
house lord or something. Okay, I get that, you know. So, but I'm saying it's not a demeaning term at all. It's a very responsible term, you know. But it applies all the way. You know, what would it be? Is it wrong? Is it okay for someone else to be covetous? No, you know, that's in the Ten Commandments, right? It's that core. This is just things that a man has to demonstrate in his life over time to some degree, because it's only, you can't, are you covetous? No. Oh, that's good. Aren't you? You know, it isn't like going on a checklist. You observe people and then are able to evaluate them. But then they're able to be a pastor if they desire to be a pastor. Okay? So that's the other thing as far as the qualifications. But instead, people have strange qualifications of pastoring, and I'm not knocking them, but a college degree in and of itself doesn't qualify you or disqualify you, thankfully, either way, because that would be disqualified. But I'm saying it doesn't really matter, right? It isn't the formal stuff. That's the list there. Okay? And it's funny because even you see this in like church constitutions and all that, and they'll go down the list and like a pastor has to meet the qualifications of 1 Timothy 3. Okay? What are they? We can look those up, but what do they mean? And how do we check them off? How can a church, any church who chooses their pastors, choose a pastor without understanding those qualifications? And yet, the congregation usually votes based on what?
Wife
on the panel is the deal nailer. That not nailed it down. But, what else? One or two sermons, any of the, you know, baritone voice, which I would have, that, you know, or whatever. Some, you know, they he's tall and handsome and he's, you know, funny, what, you know, whatever the case might be. But the criteria is in 1 Timothy 3. Okay, that's the criteria that's there. That doesn't mean that they don't define what they want him to be able to teach, what level, things like that. But those are usually set aside, and that hurts the church. That's a danger, and I think it has weakened churches because of that. The way they select pastors, the way they evaluate pastors, the way they choose them, you know, all of that.
What you've just laid out for me, of course, there is the simple fact that the church pastor should come from within the assembly and not an import from outside of the assembly.
I would say that's ideal, not always possible.
It was not necessarily ideal for these guys because the simple fact is that when you became a pastor of a church, you could very well end up in prison.
Well, and you're writing to Timothy in a town of Ephesus that was probably a larger church at that time, so they had people to draw from. Titus was a Crete. And he
was to establish
the one qualification. If you study the two, they're similar. Titus chapter 1 has a list of qualifications. 1 Timothy 3 has a list of qualifications. You know what? The one qualification that is not in Titus chapter 1. So I suppose it's applied. Apt to teach. I'm the novice. The novice, actually. Apt to teach is actually there. He's able to exhort and convince the gainsayers. So he has a working knowledge of the word of God. But the novice idea, which I don't know that you can get to have to teach, able to exhort and convince the gainsayers, but they were newer churches, and so they took the most responsible men in the body and made them elders. Okay. So, but I do believe that they need to be able to be observed. I'm not saying a church can't export someone into somebody else to help them.
If somebody, you know, somebody in your church, you know, this is the thing, your church has a particular size, and our particular families and what have you, there are, just say, that, like my wife, I mean, we've come to the church for our, if we lived in this church right from the very beginning, the cream would have come to the top, basically, and the church would have recognized our position as being, I'm going to say, educated, seasoned.
Yeah, I just call it qualified based upon what you do, how you've done it.
And over the period of time that I was there. they would have reason to say, well, this man would be our overseer, he would be our pastor.
Or one of them, that
or
is.
One of them.
I'm a multiplicity guy. You don't have to start there, but you should certainly.
But see, the thing is, it's a man who oversees money. When you look at the qualifications, he is one of many. I mean, it's not a matter that. I almost wonder if the head of the households were the presbytery. They were the ones that oversaw the church. And they didn't have a building like we have. They just basically oversaw the block. And it's just a supposition that I have no support for. That's something that I see more regularly than what was there, because there were widows in the church who lost their husbands. And the church was to take care of them.
Right, right.
That was the thing that I would see.
Anyway, so we got through three. We have the ignorant teachers, and that's using the term properly, not as a slam, because people don't know what they're talking about. The danger of role reversal, which just flips everything upside down in every way, who leads, who follows, who, and by the way, not everyone teach, like you said either, so it isn't just women that don't teach, it's lots of men don't teach too, right? And then the danger of unqualified leaders is putting, it's not saying we shouldn't have leaders, it's saying we shouldn't have leaders until they're ready to be leaders. And that makes all the difference in a church. So, and I do believe that it kind of points toward picking from within, though I don't know that you can always start with that. But obviously, that's the goal. And that doesn't mean you can't get others as well, but they would be people that other people probably know and can vouch for the qualifications.
Well, we came into this church in the middle of the situation I'm saying is it would become, with our presence in the church, our...
You brought me a present?
Yes.
Play on words.
Yes, I know.